Now, could I suggest to the young people who are listening...
These men have Viagra-fortified penises.
Hack. Triple J.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. I'm Sophie McNeil, and from old school protests to 21st century tactics. Last night, it was the UK Guardian newspaper's turn. Last week, the Associated Press. Yes, international hacktivist attacks are becoming an almost weekly or daily phenomenon. And the targets range from media organisations to the North Korean regime to international pedophile rings and even a company like PayPal. Yes, we are chatting hacktivism tonight, and I want to hear from you. Do you think that some targets are legitimate? Are groups like Anonymous a force for good? Or do you reckon that it's a slippery slope to say that one kind of hacking is acceptable, but others are cyber terrorism? We want to hear from you tonight. Give us a call, 1-300-055-36. That's 1-300-055-36. Or send us a text, 0439-75-7555. Maybe you are a hacktivist yourself. You can be anonymous both ways. We want to hear from you. Get in touch. But first, Hack's Julia Holman has been looking at the world of international and Australian-based hacktivists.
Overnight, the respected UK newspaper The Guardian had its Twitter feed attacked. But this is only the latest incident of this kind.
A fake tweet that caused havoc from Washington to Wall Street yesterday afternoon.
It's the tweet that took the hack job from nerdy prank to national security issue.
Last Tuesday's tweet from the Associated Press read, "Breaking news, two explosions in the White House and Barack Obama is injured."
Less than 140 characters causing the stock market to drop 150 points.
Just one little tweet, but for a few minutes it caused the stock market value to plummet $200 billion. The Syrian Electronic Army, which supports the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, claimed responsibility for these recent attacks. But in the past, hackers from a raft of other groups have targeted everything from oppressive government websites, the homophobic Westboro Baptist Church members, and Australian government websites.
I mean, that's really nothing more than vigilantism. People just taking the law into their own hands and deciding that they're going to be judge, jury and executioner in a particular case.
Stilgarian is a freelance writer and commentator covering tech issues, particularly online security and cybercrime.
If they're doing something that we agree with, they're hacktivists. If they're doing something they disagree with, they're vandals or criminals.
Stilgarian says there's a few examples where hacktivism has been really legit, like during the Arab Spring.
You can start to see hacktivism, like the spreading of messages or the disruption of information systems, as kind of a legitimate part of a struggle.
But he's got no tolerance for the majority of the high-profile hacks which we're seeing all the time. For instance, Aussie government websites were attacked when an internet filter and data retention was proposed. Online hacking group Anonymous published details about men who raped a girl in Steubenville, Ohio, to try to draw publicity to the case. And earlier, they took down PayPal's website when PayPal blocked payments to WikiLeaks.
We're really not in countries like Australia at the level where we have such an oppressive government we need to be doing that kind of vandalism.
Anyone can be a hacker who can hack, but only people who hack for political purposes are hacktivists.
Asha Wolf is a journalist and internet news curator.
You have to hack for political reasons, so not necessarily for reasons that all people will consider good. So you can have hackers who hack from China or perhaps Syria or other countries that we're not necessarily politically aligned with that would consider themselves hacktivists.
Asha says there's malicious impacts from these kinds of attacks.
Especially with the AP Twitter account, the phishing of that Twitter account password meant that the stock market plunged a huge, huge level in seconds, basically. And so there can be serious financial ramifications and serious ramifications that we should pay attention to.
It's very difficult for authorities to track down and successfully prosecute cyber criminals. However, last week, Australian authorities arrested and charged a 24-year-old New South Wales man, Matthew Flannery, with three counts of cybercrime for allegedly defacing an Australian government website.
It will be alleged that this person, known by the online identity OzShock, had gained unauthorised access and caused data impairment to a government agency website.
That's Commander Glenn McEwen, who's the Australian Federal Police's Manager for Cybercrime Operations. At this press conference, Detective Superintendent Brad Marsden said Matthew Flannery is not only alleged to have committed cybercrimes, but he's also the leader of notorious hacker group LulzSec.
He was actually in forums inhabited by other people of LulzSec, and there was no denials of his claims as being the leader.
Journalist Asha Wolf says it's very unlikely that Matthew Flannery is in fact the leader of LulzSec.
As far as I'm aware, Matthew Flannery is only considered the leader of LulzSec by people who are saying so sarcastically, or perhaps to promote the idea that the AFP has caught somebody who is of significance.
And she thinks, in general, the police often talk up the threat that hackers pose.
In fact, I would say that we're at far greater risk from overfunding of intelligence agencies and law enforcement who do not fully understand the nature of hackers or hacking groups online.
We don't know what damage he's done.
Nigel Fair is a director of the Centre for Internet Safety at the University of Canberra and a former officer with the AFP's High Tech Crime Centre. He says fighting cybercrime requires a lot of work for little reward.
I think the AFP do a great job for the matters that they've prosecuted and investigated thus far. We'll see how this one turns out.
He disagrees with Asha Wolf and says cyber criminals pose a serious risk to all of us. And it doesn't matter whether they're hacktivists with apparently noble intentions or just hacking to wreak havoc or for personal gain.
Gaining the unauthorised access of a computer system is a criminal offence regardless of your motivation.
And that is Hack's Julia Holman reporting there. And I want to know, what's your opinion on hacktivism? Do you reckon that some targets are legitimate? Or is it a slippery slope to say that one kind of hacking is acceptable, but that others are cyber vigilantism or cyber terrorism? Maybe you're a hacktivist yourself. Give us a call, 1300 055 36. That's 1300 055 36, or send me a text, 0439 75 7555. Got a few comments on the Triple J Hack Facebook page today. Jeff wrote, it's like asking if activism or civil disobedience is acceptable. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's misplaced. The answer depends entirely on your viewpoint. Harry reckons that the group Anonymous is very dangerous. He says their tactics and ops are often poorly thought out, and they harm the average Joe that they so honourably stand up for. And Paris reckons this is the only form of activism our generation has. She says, our pollies have shown that our petitions are ignored. Anonymous is able to do justice to people who have lost a voice. Let me know your thoughts on this one tonight. Get in touch. And joining me in the Hack Studio to chat about this, we have Dr. Soulette Dreyfus. She's from the Department of Computing and Information Systems at the University of Melbourne. She's also the co-author of Underground, a book which she wrote with Julian Assange of WikiLeaks fame about the hacking scene in the 80s and the 90s. Thanks for coming in, Soulette.
Thank you.
We also have Simon Breeny with us. He's the director of the Legal Rights Project at the Institute of Public Affairs in Melbourne. How are you, Simon?
Good. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Now, Soulette, I want to start with you. Tell us, what's the difference between hacking and hacktivism?
Well, hacking in the terminology that's used in everyday sort of reporting, which is not necessarily what the original term was, is about unauthorized access to computers or computer system. Hacktivism is really about engaging in that, but with a political or social message. And often that involves changing the content of a website, either through diverting it or getting into the system it's housed on and altering it.
Now, one of the biggest hacktivist groups that has emerged in the past few years is Anonymous.
Mm.
These are the guys who, when you see them in public, they wear the Guy Fawkes masks, so they always look great. And often if they hack into a website, that's the image they post as well. Tell us, what do we know about this group, Anonymous?
Well, not a great deal. I like to think of it a bit of like an amoeba. So you have these sort of, if you've ever looked at an amoeba under a sort of microscope in your high school biology class, you'd see these sort of, arms shooting off in different directions. And it moves around in ways that, you know, one bit will break off and then it'll regroup and rejoin. And so it's a bit unpredictable. But the main thing about Anonymous is that it's not unanimous. It's many different people, and a number of them are not actually hackers. So there's a definite part of Anonymous that are artists. There's some journalists, they're writers, they're graphic designers, they're video makers. You know, there's a whole range of people there who are involved in the activism of Anonymous without actually being involved in illegal hacking.
Chris has called in from the sunny coast. Chris, you used to lurk on forums where Anonymous members hung out. What's your take on this one?
That's a pretty actually accurate description, the amoeba, in that they don't really have a sense of direction. They are sort of unconstrained and pretty crazy.
So what do you think? Is it? They've been called the Robin Hoods of the internet because they like to take a cause, but you know, not everyone agrees with the causes they pick up. What do you reckon? A force for good or a force for evil?
Well, I've seen some causes that they've taken up that have been very excellent. Actually, there was one particular case where a couple of young idiots posted a video of them abusing and killing a cat. And the anonymous group got together, traced the video, found out who posted it, got their real names and reported them to the authorities in America. And these people actually got into a court case because of what they did to this animal. Like it was an animal abuse case. Mm-hmm. That never would have happened without the anonymous group basically going, well, hang on, we don't like this. Let's do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for you, that was an example. And what about something you didn't agree with? Did you see any of that when you were hanging out there on those forums?
Yeah, when they would have, one of the worst ones I think that they did was they did a let's put porn on YouTube day where they decided that they would upload a pornographic video onto YouTube and classify it as hidden so no one could see it until you release it to the public. And then a particular time and date, they all release it to the public on the same day. So on one particular day on YouTube, there were literally thousands of porn videos made under different accounts. Now that is not like, whilst it might be a little bit funny sort of thing, there's really a lot of kids who look at YouTube, and I've got two daughters myself, and I think that's a pretty stupid thing to do.
Thanks so much for the call, Chris. I really appreciate it. It's interesting to hear someone who hung out and spoke to some of these people because, yeah, Time Magazine named Anonymous as one of the most influential groups in the world last year, and there is no defined leadership structure. I mean, can you say, Dr. Sulet, from your research, what they stand for? Because as we heard there from Chris, it seems very wide-ranging from, you know, standing up for animal rights to kind of posting porn for a bit of a lull.
Yeah, so there's, as I say, Anonymous, I don't think is unanimous. If there were a common theme that was a social change theme that was perhaps the most unanimous, even though it's not completely possibly unanimous, it would be about demanding more freedom of speech and sort of the basic human right under Article 19 of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is about freedom of expression. That being said, it's a very diverse group where people have differing views about what is acceptable in freedom of expression and what isn't. It's not one group that has just one view. And certainly there is an element of it that is in it for the lulls. So lulls means laughing at your security is typically about trying to poke fun at something. And sometimes that's poking fun at a political regime who might be repressive or doing something unethical. So, for example, the hack on the North Korean government Twitter account had pictures of the leader of North Korea that were not particularly flattering. But it can also be about just lulzy things like breaking into someone's account because you can, because the security's poor and poking fun at it without perhaps so much of a political agenda.
Now I want to bring in Simon Brini here because Simon, you're not convinced that, yeah, there is that many lols in all of this. So tell me, what do you make of a group like Anonymous?
There are a lot of things involved in what is hacktivism and what is hacking. There's obviously the really low-level stuff, and sometimes that's not too bad. But in the kind of middle and in the really high-profile stuff that we hear about a lot in the media, that to me is something that's really unacceptable. Taking people's private data out of accounts that they think are secure, breaching security on websites and breaching security protocols online is something that I'm strongly against. And essentially the reason for that is because this is about the rule of law. If we have a situation online where people are ignoring the laws that they otherwise would be constrained by, where we have an environment where we don't have the rule of law, we don't accept vigilante justice offline, nor should we online either.
But do you think some of their targets are legitimate? I mean, Anonymous has hacked into the Ugandan government website when they promoted a crazy bill that discriminated heavily against homosexual people. They've also highlighted an international pedophile ring, something that you know, our police work very hard to do crack down on international pedophile rings, and here was Anonymous, the ones who were doing the work of the police, in a sense. I mean, do you agree that sometimes there are legitimate targets?
There, I mean, a lot of people will agree with vigilante justice. You know, you see really heroic depictions of vigilante justice in films that Hollywood puts out. You know, the Jodie Foster in The Brave one is a great example of that. But at the end of the day, even if you do, you know, sitting on the sidelines, feel like cheering these people on, we have a system that's based on the rule of law, and there are really, really important principles that have been built into our legal system over hundreds of years, and it's so important that we maintain those and promote those. It's only really through a system that's governed by the rule of law that we can actually have justice in any real sense.
Well, Alyssa from Salem, Victoria, agrees with you. She says hacking can have a huge impact on our national security. It can never be condoned because this can endanger lives. Think military, do we want to reveal these details and risk our national security? That's what Alyssa reckons. And on the line, I've got Charlie, who's calling from Queensland. Charlie, you think people misunderstand what Anonymous is really about. What's your take on this?
Well, I do. I think what people don't really understand is that Anonymous is not really a group at all. Anonymous is just, if someone takes an action without wanting to reveal their identity, they're more anonymous, if you know what I mean. Whereas, like, for instance, the LulzSec person, Matthew Flannery, you know, the first attack I remember from LulzSec was, I think it was on the Sony PlayStation hack a couple of years ago, where they compromised every account on the network. But what I mean is that group, officially, because everyone in LulzSec is anonymous, is not necessarily affiliated with what claims to be LulzSec now, if you know what I mean.
So it's very hard to talk about what they stand for, to say if they are a force for good, or the Robin Hoods of the internet, if you don't know who's a member. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's more of people, or, you know, in the media, they seem to think the hacking group Anonymous, they say it's they, whereas it's not necessarily anyone. It could be one person with a political aim, or it could be a group of people, or I'm not sure if you understand what I'm saying, but yeah.
Well, it is true that there's no leadership. There is actually, you can't officially become a member of Anonymous. You just, simply by wishing to join, you are a member, apparently, so.
Well, I mean, even, like, if you take, for example, an Anonymous poem, the Anonymous poem is not necessarily affiliated with everyone else who's wrote an Anonymous poem, although the poem is by Anonymous because just no one knows who wrote it, if you get me.
Yes, it is. It is an interesting organisation. Thanks so much for the call, John. I'm going to go to an anonymous person who's called in from Brizzy, because you say you're a hacktivist, but you choose your causes carefully. Tell us about that.
Yep, that's correct. Basically, whatever cause that you have, you can choose it just by virtue of the fact, like, might have not enough exposure to it in the media, or it might be you feel not being looked at closely enough by politicians, et cetera, et cetera. That's why or how I choose my time personally.
So what are your causes that you...
I'm very strongly for WikiLeaks and the open information movement. So, and things like that. So that's what I choose.
So how do you do this? How do you operate as part of being a hacktivist?
I'm sure your listeners don't want to listen to technicalities as how you can engage in information management attacks and things like that. But I'm sure some of them do, indeed.
Some of them might want to join you, or yeah, some of them might want to arrest you. Well, we don't know who's listening.
That's the point. Exactly right. But Chris, he elucidated a good point previously. Anonymous is a group that generally... it can be started by post on a forum in 4chan, and then all of a sudden, for instance, a lot of the attacks that have been done previously, like, for instance, vigilante justice against people who, like, for instance, have posted details of their ex-girlfriends online. Sure, it seems like fun, but it's not something I'd align myself with, and so therefore I wouldn't consider myself a part of Anonymous just because I've chosen not to be a part of that attack. So therefore, it's just whichever people agree to do whatever part can all just be labelled anonymous at any one given time. And often anonymous is just the final factor in something that's being done by another anonymous hacking group previously. That's
I want to interrupt because we don't have that much time left, and I want to see what you think of Simon's point that, you know, it doesn't matter if it's for a good cause or not, that at the end of the day, this is vigilantism, and, you know, it undermines the rule of law when you have, you know, hacktivists like yourself, promoting your causes, you know, often causing people a lot of trouble online.
Well, I guess the thing is that it does, no matter which way you choose to be civilly disobedient, then, you know, you're always going to have some effect on some person. And with regards to being online, it makes absolutely no difference to that whatsoever. It's just that some people may respect the rule of law a little bit more than others. So that's where I'll finish.
Thanks so much for your call. I want to go back to you, Simon Breeny. Do you think that the authorities have the legislation they need at the moment to deal with these groups? Do we need harsher laws?
I think essentially the balance is about right. As I understand it, there are sort of four levels, ranging from the very serious to the quite minor, and it's appropriate, I think, that police have the power and law enforcement agencies have the power to go after hackers who are doing things that are at the more serious end. I mean, there's a question about the grey area at the bottom and whether or not low level breaches of security are something that the police need to be equipped to go after. But I mean, at the end of the day, the principle remains that the police should be able to go after people who've broken the law. There are really legitimate ways of trying to go about making these changes and to try and change policies of companies or the law, whether it comes to government or private companies. The point is that, you know, you should go about it in a peaceful way that doesn't interfere with others' lives. You should go about it by going on programs like Triple J's Hack.
We've only got like 30 seconds left. Sue, tell us, do you worry that if they, I guess, increase kind of the punishment for people that, kids will get caught up. Kids may.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a crackdown that's, increased in recent years. And that causes me concern because I don't think there is a clear enough delineation between people who are engaged in peaceful acts of civil disobedience, minor infringements that are really designed to just be the equivalent of an electronic sit-in in some, you know, entry hall in a big corporation, versus those that are really engaged in criminality or stealing credit cards and engaged in fraud.
Dr. Suelette Dreyfus from the University of Melbourne and Simon Breeny from the Institute of Public Affairs. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for your calls and texts tonight. See you later.
Thank you.